Welcome back, everybody, to Art's About.
A show about art, Will. It's a work of art in itself and brought to you by the generosity of the McClellan Gallery with its new director, the Sculpture Park out there, and helped along by the Bendy Bank Studio. And there's the red sign on the wall over there. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, John. And it is indeed a sign. It's just Will and John this week. Sabra is travelling. And Cliff, I believe, after doing his Mad Monday, AFL Monday, I think has headed off with the team on their end of season trip. Now, I've got to get this right. Mm-hmm. My head says that he's with Collingwood, but my heart says he's actually gone with the Footscray players on their end of season trip.
Perhaps he is a Collingwood supporter and has, however, gone with Footscray.
He may well have, but we don't know. Or he could have just gone to the RSL early. Anyway, good morning, Cliff. He's not here, but we'll say good morning. You know, he says he never listens, but I know that he does, because when we talk about him when he's not here, he always comments on it the next week.
Yes.
And I think he's got it in for Swanee.
Well, who hasn't?
That's right. I think so he should. Yeah. Sally, of course, is still travelling in Turkey. She'll be back soon. She's sampling food treats in Turkey, close to Syria. I hope she's okay. And she's also looking at lots of art over there. Yeah. Did you know that Cliff was unwell last week?
I didn't. When he was I wouldn't have said that I'd noticed he was unwell. But he is the professional, and he knows how to do that. He knows how to get into a room, do the job, and not let anyone know that he may be unwell or not.
He does. He's the only true professional that we have. And, of course, we value him. I need to say that, don't I?
Yeah. Well, let's see if he hears that one.
I'm quite excited by this week's show, and I'm going to outline what's coming up, of course, but I'll do that a little later. But we're also going to look forward to hearing from you, John. So what will you be talking about this
week? I'm going to talk about the pilotless jet, Will, which is a utterly true story that affected me in some ways and led to some paintings, one of which was a kind of a courting present to my wife.
Ooh, well, I'm looking
forward to my long-suffering bride.
Okay. Well, look, we were lucky enough. We look forward to that. We were lucky enough to have famed musician Nicholas Lyon in the studio with us some time ago, and you were there with with Nick, and also with his great friend Roger Foley, also known as LSD Fogg. He's a friend of the show, and they spoke with you and Sally for some time. We recorded it. So
both giants of the Sydney art scene in the 70s.
They are. They're famed. So away we go. Let's have a listen.
64th birthday on the weekend. And we had a pretty wild night, didn't we, John?
Well, for a start, you've just outed him.
I know. He's just horrified when I said that.
No, I'm not allowed to say this, but he is, in fact, over there in the corner, unshaven.
Yeah, he is. Anyway, we've had an amazing party, and we've had some amazing guests at our party this weekend, and I've managed to talk two of them into coming into the studio this morning. Friend of the show, Roger Foley, a.k.a. LSD Fogg, who's been on the show before. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Roger.
Thanks for coming in. What a great pleasure it is to get you into the studio.
Oh, thank you.
And the other guest that I have into the studio, who's already spoken, completely out of protocol, is Nicholas Lyon. And he is a musician, violinist and composer. And we're very excited to have him into the studio. But Nicholas has been serenading us most of the weekend with many of his instruments. He plays all sorts of things. And I thought it would be really great to get you to come in to talk to us a little bit about things that you've done, Nicholas. Roger and Nicholas are old friends, and I think that friendship emanates back from the days when you were a music master at the Yellow House. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That'd be right.
Music master, great title.
Yeah, it was. Well, we had lots of amazing people in the Yellow House, and that seemed to be just, you know, I mean, I've got the top room, put in a little recording studio and lots of instruments, and would play with most of the minstrels that came by, which were many, from all over the planet.
For the very few of you out there who perhaps haven't heard of the Yellow House, of course, it was a sensational house in Macleay Street in, was it Macleay Street? 57 to 59 Macleay Street in Sydney, in King's Cross, and a huge amount of artists frequented the place during the 60s.
Well, indeed, and on the catalogue poster that Albie Toms and Dick Waite did. There are over 100 artists are mentioned.
Yeah, it was a real fulcrum at its time, wasn't it, of eccentric art, indulgence, music, and...
It was an expression of freedom.
Yes.
You didn't have any parties in there, I suppose.
Oh, we had a few parties.
The Cloud Room was a continuous party. The Cloud Room was an amazing place. Barry Humphries had arrived, and Little Nell had arrived, and God knows, all sorts of people. What's her name? That wonderful lady that I can't think of her name. Marion Faithfull, you know, they just walk in the door, you know.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, a party would go on. And
Pink Floyd came, Marty Feldman.
Lots of altered states of mind were there. Mm-hmm. And it was all very enthusiastic. The whole place was sort of, you know, had this wonderful passion about it. And when we had all our work in front of us, before we actually painted the whole 2-3-story terrace houses yellow outside, we had to paint the inside as well. And that was going to be done with Magritte and Bellozzi and Whiteley and Martin Sharp and Karen Hobby, was it? And Dickie Wade.
Everybody who walked in the door was given a brush.
Yeah, you start painting here. Yeah, we need this room black.
Well, we've had Roger came on the show some time ago, and we talked quite a bit about the Yellow House, but there's. There are obviously many, many, many more stories that we have never heard, of course. But one thing, what I wanted to do first of all was that I just wanted to describe for our listeners, first of all, who you are, Nicholas, because you haven't been on the show before. And you're a musician and violinist, but you're originally from the UK, Lancashire.
That's
in the
right,
UK.
Yeah,
and you began your studies over there, but you did say to me that you started playing music when you were 5.
Yeah, I was a young starter. I remember going to the Curzon, which was the local cinema next to the swimming pool, the bath. It was fantastic. It had a dome, a glass dome.
Yeah.
It was the first glass dome I ever saw. And won a box of chocolates playing a hymn on my squeeze box.
Oh, did you? How sweet.
I worked out with my dad, you know.
So was that it? Was that the thing you thought, I can do this?
No, well, I found that in Anglesey in Wales. You know, I went to see a Danny Kaye show. I came out from there in the middle of the day. It was bright sunshine. You know what it's like when you come in from the out from the cinema at a matinee, a midday matinee. You know, you get blinded with the light. And it was beautiful little sort of a very small little piazza, sort of like a little village square. Whitewashed walls, thatched cottages, and a man playing a squeeze box. And I've just come up from this high of Danny Kaye's, you know.
Danny Kaye.
No, I used to love Danny Kaye.
Danny Kaye, you know. It was great. And I saw this guy playing the squeeze box against this whitewashed wall, and I thought, that's what I want to do.
Play music.
That's it.
Yeah.
And it's just like the penny dropped.
Well, you were lucky enough to get a scholarship to study violin and viola with Robert Morley, first of all, at the Royal College of Music
in
Manchester.
Yeah, I used to go and get on the 23 bus and after school and traipse down, go to Albert Square, have egg and chips.
As you do.
And then hop in and go and have a lesson under the stairs in this very small room, you know, with the staircase going through your head. It was quite bizarre.
But then your family...
I remember the smells of that place. Too, you know, it was like
the egg
really
and chips.
Old, but no, we left that behind. But the conservatorium there. College of Music was old, really old. You know, you could smell it. It was like
your dust has a certain smell,
doesn't it?
Yeah. My mother's studio, she was a photographer, and she had this staircase which sort of, it was almost sepia. The smell of sepia.
But so then your family dragged you out here to the Antipodes.
That's right, yes.
And another scholarship ensued, I believe.
Well, eventually, yeah. When I got myself, I chased this great-great-granddaughter of Ben Hall to Sydney and ended up in Sydney. I wanted to go and learn from Ernest Llewellyn in Canberra, but I think he was a bit busy. He had too many students and... so I had to wait for a little while, and I eventually got in this little Morris Minor with a bass that I just made with my father, and popped it in there, and I made my way to Sydney and started playing. This band, which we did 3 gigs a night, kept me alive. And I got these scholarships for violin, viola, double bass, conservatorium. And so, because I wanted to learn the strings, I wanted to learn all about strings. So I've got violin, viola, cello, double bass. I've got two.
You moved on from the squeeze box.
Yeah, moved on from. Oh, I've still got the squeeze box.
Have you?
Yeah, still got that. But then we wanted to get into world music as well, you know, because being introduced to the music of the Beatles and, you know, all that wonderful sort of East-West meeting, and I really like Ravi Shankar and Menuhin playing together. I thought that was a very nice move, you know. And then meeting Brett and Martin.
That's Brett Whiteley and Brett Martin Sharp.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously Roger Foley at that time at the Yellow House, yes.
Yeah, I played when I first. Well, one of the memorable times I was playing at Manly Surf Club with a big band called Heart and Soul. They had a big rhythm section and lots of brass, and they used to play MacArthur Park and things like that. You know.
Did you ever see them, Roger?
Oh yes, I did shows with them many, many times. Lindsay Farr is still a very good friend.
Yes, yes, he's still with us and still blowing. And I remember Roger had his early fog going at that stage.
Oh, the beautiful the dry ice.
No, it wasn't dry ice.
Oh,
wasn't
it?
Do you remember the machine it was? It used to smell like oil.
Yes. You know, there were lots of different kinds of fog machines, and we were developing our own, and some of them were a bit on the smelly side, I have to confess. The best fog that in the end was a pure water fog.
That's the one. Yeah.
Mm. Is that the dry ice one? No, that's nitrogen,
no,
isn't it?
No, it was done with high pressure jets, which atomizes the water.
Oh.
We'd get some pea supers on stage, you know, and everyone would disappear. Yeah.
Such good fun, though, isn't it? To froth around in a fog like that.
Lovely. Yeah.
But you also, with all of this art and music and contemporary culture at the time, you also were working for the ABC, weren't you, with Peter Sculthorpe?
Yeah, I did a little bit. Peter rang me up one day and he said, Nick, I've got to do some music around this poetry. And he said, would you come into the ABC with your koto, which I just bought from Gary Shedd, another artist. I found this koto on the wall at Gary's house.
You might have to describe what a koto is.
Koto is a 13-string silk stringed, I suppose, Japanese piano, early piano, but it's like a harp. You know, you play with these three little plectras on your fingers. And beautiful instrument. And that inspired me because I used to see Brett doing calligraphy. And he liked to play a lot of Japanese music there with shakuhachi and while he was working. You know, he always had music when he was working. And, I sort of integrated that into my relationship with Brett because we were sort of neighbours in Lavender Bay for a long time. And I used to go and cook down at the studio at the Gasworks and make chapatis and mushroom curries and open a couple of bottles of wine and blitz it in the afternoon. As Brett would put it, we'll blitz it. And he's doing all these great big Buddhas, you know, huge paintings and the Ravi Shankar drawings, you know.
Yes.
Ravi's playing with all those vibrating
That's
lines.
You.
No, that was Ravi.
It was actually Ravi.
That was Ravi, but I brought in the sitar so he could sort of like, because, he and I sort of had some
That would have been a wild old time then, nice, fantastic.
Yeah. So that Japanese harp, did it have a case?
Did it have a case?
A case. Did it come in a case? Because must have been a very nice-looking case. I like musical instrument cases that you've got no idea what's in them.
It looks like a coffin, but it's like a surfboard, the actual look of the instrument. But I couldn't get a case for that. But I did make one. I made a big canvas one with lots of padding in it.
And,
I remember catching it when I was flying TAA one day. I said, can I put my instruments on the plane in Adelaide? I'm going to Sydney. And they said yes. So I went and loaded all my instruments on. And can I take them off when I get to Sydney? Yes. So when I got to Sydney, no. So what they used to do then is put the baggage on. They put them on the baggage, these instruments, which were fragile.
And we all know about baggage handlers, don't we?
And they had those flying saucer, delivery chutes, the chute comes up and then it goes up in the air like this and then goes boom. And, you know, your instruments come sliding down this thing. I managed to get to that little flying saucer and catch my instruments as they were just about to go bang.
Yeah.
Never went fly. I never flew again, TAA. I never did. No, it was terrible.
Well, none of us do anymore.
No, we've all given it up. So how did you actually get involved in the Yellow House? Was it just through these friendship groups?
Yeah, things were happening in Sydney. You know, there was the Ashes of Sydney, which were doing fairy concerts, and we were working with dance companies. I was working with the One Extra Dance Company, and I was working with the Nimrod and Sydney Theatre Company, and there was all these, you know, you were just in a whole pile of art all the time. It was great. And as soon as I heard the Yellow House was all happening, I sort of took an interest in there, and then, you know, you just got compelled to sort of like be part of it, you know. And I went to a lot of the meetings, which were always sort of a bit smoky. And
cigarettes,
we talked,
Roger?
We talked about it. We talked about it many, many, many months before we actually managed to, you know, persuade all the paint companies around town, because Martin was very good at this, to give them paint, because we didn't have any money. When we got to trying to do something with a zilch budget.
Yep.
Yeah, so we ended up with a lot of paint.
And did you get all the same colour yellow?
Yeah, outside, yes.
Yes, it was all the same. And Dick Waite had great plans. He wanted to paint the Harbour Bridge yellow as well.
He'd still be doing it, wouldn't
That's
he? Isn't that what you have
I
to do?
I recorded that. I recorded the Harbour Bridge. I used to just sort of put contact marks on the bridge. And put it on my little my professional cassette player, which would record quite nicely with you know, sound noise reduction and stuff.
Okay.
But you know, you get all these vibrations of trains and this general vibrations of the steel all happening. And then I'd put that on one track in a stereo image, and then go up into the expansion grids. These little grids where on a hot day they bridge sort of moves, and the train would go over, and the mini miner would go over these things, these little grids, and it would go ding ding, and the bus would go dum dum. So there was all these different notes coming out. It was you know, you were finding all these pitches, you know, and I'd speed them up, I'd play them at double speed, and you know, we were doing Music Concrete at the time too, so where you get certain bits of tape and you say, I want that little bit to sit with this little bit.
Yeah.
And you'd stitch them all together and make up this Music Concrete.
Music Concrete, did you call it?
That's what it's called.
Oh, yeah, is it?
Concrete. Yeah. It's a...
Is that a French word?
They were doing that in those days. Yeah. With Stockhausen and Boulez and lots of other composers.
Stockhausen's the jazz, the...
No, he was he did this one wonderful thing with voices and lots of... He was creating sounds.
So composing with ambient sound, which is kind of like collage in music,
That's
isn't
right.
it?
Yeah. So it was a bit, you know, some people would say it was dada because it didn't mean anything, but it, you know, to ears, you know, everyone was experimenting with electronics, very early electronics. Yeah.
What does mean anything, Nick?
Yeah. Right.
And you were doing it on a visual level, Roger, of course,
well,
at that time.
Well, yes, and I worked with Stockhausen's piece as well for the ABC. In Sydney Town Hall, we did a light show to a piece called Gesang der Jungelinga, Song of the Youths, and it was for the prom concerts. And that was a lot of fun.
Yes.
We did that before Peter Sculthorpe wrote a piece for the band Tully, the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, and for me.
And Jeannie singing. Wow, it's an amazing concert.
Yes. Well, I think it'd be great to actually listen to something of yours right now, Nicholas, if you could. What do you think we should play?
Whatever you like.
All right, then. Well,
shall I do this one first?
Yeah, you've got something on... you've got a composition that you've written yourself.
Yeah, well...
And you've actually recorded it yourself too. So you've
composed... Yeah, I do most of the recording at home these days.
And is this a reasonably recent piece? Or is this something you did a while ago?
No, it's fairly recent. This is a song. You know, I very rarely sing, but because I'm usually playing instruments.
Yeah.
Most of my music is sort of almost like chamber music.
Yes.
But well, occasionally I get moved to, you know, write a little
song. Do something
song.
A little bit out there. Yeah. Well, what's it called?
This is called All of Us, I think.
Okay.
I hope it is. We'll see what happens.
All of
yes,
Us.
Yes.
Okay. We're talking to Nicholas Lyon and Roger Foley, musical artist and illuminations artist. And we're very lucky to have them in the studio today.
Chewing I didn't know you sang songs, Nick.
He does.
He does. Yeah. Let me tell you why I say that.
Very rarely, you know, very rarely. But I was moved by a relationship that I had with a French lady, but she was pretty bad. So I, you know, really got to my guts, you know. And,
the reason I say that is because I had Nick come down and play at a party at my place some years ago.
That's right, he did.
A decade ago, actually, and I invited him to come down on a Saturday afternoon. He played.
I was there.
He played till Tuesday.
That's right.
Well, we're very lucky. He's been doing a bit the same.
And not
at our
one,
place.
Not one song no, from one Saturday song. Till Tuesday.
No, that's right. I was in my orchestral mood.
Yeah.
Then, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played with lots of different people of your spectrum, and you know, Thorpey and Heart and Soul and. Margaret Rodenight,
Jeannie Lewis,
all these different places. Yeah, Jeannie, we had fun in the early days.
Kavisha Mazzella,
which is and Kavisha, Kavisha, yeah.
She's Kavisha. A fabulous artist, isn't she?
Kavisha, yeah. I'm playing with this lady called Meryl Lepard at the moment. She's
a poet.
She's a poet and a singer and a jazz singer. She's a great lady, and this other lady, Jeanette Geary, who's a fantastic Celtic singer. She's Scottish, Irish, doing lovely concerts. We'll be doing lots of festivals up in the Massillon Ranges shortly.
Now, you play lots of instruments too, and you've been playing them all weekend at our house, casually picking one up after the other, that's violin right. being possibly the more predominant, but there were two others whose names, I've had to write them down on a piece of
is
paper.
Right? I'll tell you what they are.
Yes, what were they?
Well, it was good because when we had the party the other night at your house,
yes.
We had some Chinese food come in, you see.
Yes.
Somebody, this lovely lady, what was her name?
Melly Soen.
Melly came in, and she was a beautiful Chinese cook. And just before she started cooking, I just happened to sort of throw in, you know, a couple of instruments in the car. And one of them was the cheng, which is like a koto, but it's a steel version of the koto, Chinese. And so I played her a little...
She came in, she was thrilled.
I just played. She said, I didn't know people like you could play, you know, such traditional Chinese music.
Like she meant people like you being not Chinese.
That's right. That's right. I didn't look Chinese at all, no. Anyway, and I also brought this, it's a bowed sitar called a dilruba, which we used when we played Abbey Road and Sgt. Pepper's in the concert hall at the Opera House just recently. And the dilruba is a bit like a sarangi, if anyone knows what a sarangi is.
I don't.
That's another Indian instrument. You know, getting to know all these different instruments and learning how to play them is always a lot of fun. But the dilruba. We've been playing a little bit of that because I've been working on Logic Audio. There's a new Logic Audio where you can get all sorts of little backings together and you can build pieces out of samples of, you know, tablas and tamboras and sitars and ouds and mixing up instruments again, you know, trying to get more and more instruments. I play with a guy called Jali Bouba as well, who plays the kora. He's from Senegal.
Oh, I love the kora.
Senegal, and he's a fabulous player. He's a hell of a guy to be with because he's naughty. Yeah.
Naughty and fun, probably. Now, while we were off air and listening to that track that we played just a moment ago, you mentioned things called theremins, which, apart from sounding a bit like a vitamin, they're not, are they? It's another stringed instrument of sorts.
It's an electronic instrument, actually. It's like it's this wire that goes off into a room, a space, and you can go close to it with your hand, and it changes the oscillator that it's connected to. So you turn it on, it goes... And if you put hand close to it, it goes... And you push your hand forward... So you can just control the pitch with
movement.
With movement. So
it's not really playing music. It's more interfering with a wire.
Interfering with the wire. Fair enough. Yes, interfering
with the wire. Right. Mm. And that would work
inducing
quite well with,
music.
That would work quite well with a dance, wouldn't it?
It would.
With a dancer.
Yes.
And physical theatre.
We just brought up this lady that we worked with who was also... she worked with Stockhausen as well. She's not with us anymore. She went to Pondicherry and she couldn't get help and perished. And she's not with us anymore. She's a great person. She used to have these pressure-sensitive floors, triangular floors that she got made. And they had lights in them and these little...
Philippa Cullen we're talking about.
Philippa Cullen, that's right.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes, and...
She had it made in her house.
No, she got them made. Yeah. Got them made.
No, yeah, but was it for on stage or
performances,
okay.
Which we did. I remember she introduced them at Watters Gallery in Sydney in the 80s, very early 80s.
Did they produce a noise as well as a display of something?
Yes, yeah, they were all connected to synthesizers of some sort. Yeah, and then they also had a camera which had little nodes in it where you could see your finger and you could just in space, press the node. The camera was looking at you, at your finger, and if you touched those nodes that were on the screen, it was like having those little things on your computer, you know, the little boxes where it says, you know, all your certain folders, you know. You could touch a folder, and it had set off a sequence, you know. It was all...
So very early...
I mean, this is early stuff.
Early multimedia sort of interactive stuff, yeah.
We had a lovely time with... I always like putting speakers far apart in the environment, you know, like out in the bush. It was one Adelaide festival. I was working with Marilyn Wood. We had all these dancers from ADT, and they were doing this show, a ballet show, you know, outside the museum, and they were dancing in a fountain. They had these lycra, wonderful sort of autumn-y coloured sort of bodysuits, which were all fabulous colours, and they would just dance in the fountain. And then there was another one at the opening of the festival where we had the dancers working at the festival centre there on the plaza, and we had a crane with a guy playing Chopin going around in this crane, you know, this big grand piano flying around, just going around in circles.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And
your life must be a terrible disappointment.
Charlotte Mormon would be up there half naked, just about naked, with little roses on her nipples and playing an iced cello. She was sitting there. An iced cello, yeah. And it was just melting as she played it. She'd sit there for hours. And, amazing time.
Well, given that you sort of a traditional start with Danny Kaye and a squeeze box and then the violin and Robert Morley and the conservatorium in Sydney, you've actually had a very unconventional life and career path, really, given sort of that beginning in a way.
The only way to survive in my, as I see it, is to be versatile.
Yeah.
So I've worked in folk music, jazz, you know, classical music. We sort of tried to start world music, I think. You know, we worked in Adelaide a lot with various sarod players and sitar
players. This is out of WOMAD, presumably.
Well, yes. WOMAD came up from that, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, we were... this is early days, you know.
Yeah.
Early 70s, and I think it was all
starting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And...
I think that's what makes Nicholas such a great player, actually, his classical background.
Yeah, well,
his musical education, which informs all the crazy things that he's done and continues to do today.
Yeah, good point, Roger.
Yeah, Mum used to take me to the Halle Orchestra a lot, and I learned about the orchestra quite a lot by just sitting over the double basses one week, over the first violins the next week, round at the front with the conductor the next week, and out the back with all the brass and the woodwinds and the percussion. You know, so it was interesting to see this
how everything
the cymbal player sitting there for such a long time, waiting, counting all the bars.
Yeah.
For his big crash.
Waiting for his moment.
So tell me, how, if anybody would like to hear your music, and you've got recordings of it.
Yeah.
How do they do that?
Well, I've just released these three albums. One's called Unicorn, the other one's called, that was the early one, the other one's called As One, and the other one is called Graceful, and they are available on CD Baby or iTunes. You can just go to iTunes and you can download them, and you can get all the artwork as well, so it's getting better and better all the time. I don't have to carry them around in my car with all my other instruments.
Yes, isn't that
it's
great?
It's much easier that way. Apart from that, I usually print them all myself at home and just carry a few with me so that, you know, when somebody says, well, I don't have a computer.
Yeah.
And you can download your favourite track for
$2.50. That's right. Yeah.
So if someone sees an old combi going down the road with some moss on the side window,
that's
probably Nick.
Moss, hasn't it?
Pull him over and ask him if he's got any CDs.
Because he'll
don't
probably
worry,
have one or
I'll
two.
I'll be going slow. It's okay. Stop me and buy one.
You also have a website, of course, Nicholas Lyon.
Yes, I do. It's about to be upgraded because I can never keep up with what I'm doing. You know, you have to sort of
it's very
chase
hard,
your tail,
yes.
Isn't it? All the time, isn't it?
Particularly when it's not the thing that you're most interested in.
That's
you
right.
know, of course, the thing that you're interested in is music.
Lots of rehearsing.
Yes.
And sometimes rehearsing. But spontaneity, I find, is the best thing. Many a time I've gone to places, like I went to pick up my girlfriend from Alice Springs once. And there was I just got through Woomera, that's right, and I going along the road for hours and hours and hours in the combi, another combi with a bubble on top.
A fancy combi.
Do you remember my bubble on top?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And, yes, we used to use that in the Adelaide festivals to put white marked people and lights under their faces. So as we were driving along the street, this living clown or... Anyway, we're going through the desert, and you come to this place which has got one building in it, or two buildings. One's, God knows what it is, it's a homestead of some sort, and there's a school there. And I was going up to meet my girlfriend, and I had just got out of Adelaide with baskets full of fresh food and all, you know, instruments from all over the world. And I stopped at this place, and I popped into this school, and I said, look, I'm just on my way up to Alice, but would you like me to come in and show the kids all these musical instruments they've never seen? And they said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Okay, so it stopped everything, drop everything, and I bring out the sitar and the kojo and a double bass and a violin and kalimbas and a few drums and a gong.
Couldn't believe their luck.
Big gong, big tam-tams, big 40-inch tam-tam, which I bought in Adelaide years ago, which has been... standing there, it's got a lovely inscription, treasure comes, you know.
That's a beautiful notion, isn't it? Treasure comes. I think I'm going to write that down.
Anyway, they were thrilled, and then I just disappeared. But spontaneously, you know, you go around and people have never heard a live violin before. They hear it, you know, but people tend to take music for granted these days, wouldn't it? Because the CDs are so available and the radio's everywhere and, you know, it's... But I like going in somewhere, and I like hearing an artist playing. You know, I'll be very polite and say, you know, I'd love to play some violin with you. You know, and they say, can you play? And I say, oh well,
a bit.
Have a go. And then we start. You know, I end up doing the whole night for nothing, but the whole vibe changes, which is great.
Yeah,
and,
it is.
Everyone gets happy from that, and I've done an awful lot.
Well, I've been at one of those because I was out with dinner with you, Roger, many years ago, and you said, I've got this friend coming along. I think he's going to play some music for us, and I had no idea. And we had Japanese food in Melbourne, and you got up and played, and I just couldn't. I was transfixed. It was just extraordinary. I've been thinking about your music ever since. And spontaneity is the word. It's fantastic.
I love it.
Thank you so very much for coming in to talk to us today on Arts About, Nicholas Lyon and Roger Foley.
Yes, Roger.
It's been a real treasure, and treasure comes, as you say.
It does indeed.
Right. Thanks a lot. Now, we're going to go out and we're going to listen to another one of your tracks now. This one's from one of the albums called Graceful, and it's Flinders Coral Sky.
Yeah.
This is one of my faves, I've got to say.
Okay, good.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Nick.
All right. Thanks, Johnny.
I like the way you wear your headphones with a certain insouciance.
Insouciance? Yeah, well, you know, I...
And now it's time for John.
Thank you, Swanee. You don't really get from that beautiful sting just how disturbing Swanee is, do you?
No, you don't. He is a worry of a person.
Mm. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show that I want to talk about pilotless jets, or in fact, a pilotless jet in particular. Are you familiar with the 1980s MiG jet fighters, Will?
I've heard of MiG jet fighters from the Korean War and right through to the current time, I think.
Yeah. My particular favourite is one that's over at Point Cook, which is a Russian MiG, from the 1950s or mid-50s, which is made out of plywood. Which you don't sort of, it's sort of a surprising thing to think about it, isn't it? A jet fighter made out of plywood?
Well, I'm not surprised because I've seen some of the Russian jet fighters at the air show and they are held together with string. They go like hell.
Right.
The fastest things that have ever been built.
And they make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
One of them in 1989, as I remember, a current MiG jet fighter in the Soviet Union, as it was at the time, was just hanging together, I think, in 1989. This plane was flying around the northern area of the old USSR and heading into Europe. And the pilot got a reading, apparently, on the dashboard, which was saying the plane was about to fall apart. And he made a decision at the time, which was that he wasn't going to be in the plane when it fell apart. So he pulled the ejector seat button and out he went. The plane, however, kept going, and it drifted around the northern part of the continent there and had a couple of Russian MiG fighters following it, looking for an opportunity to shoot it down, but was over land and over populated areas for most of the time, and they didn't really get a chance to do anything. So they warned people in the more European part of the continent there that this pilotless jet was drifting around the north there. They were hoping that it might head out into the sea somewhere, but couldn't really do much about it. I think there were some jets scrambled in Holland or Belgium or somewhere, and they got up there to have a bit of a look. Unfortunately, the plane just drifted further south and at some point ran out of fuel and sort of silently fell out into the sky and hit an apartment building in a small town in Belgium. And there was one fatality, which was a young man who was watching soccer on the TV. And it just made me think, you never really know when a MiG fighter's going to come through the window. You know, how could you tell that was going to happen?
Watching soccer,
yeah. And the MiG fighter came through the window behind him and took him out. And it fascinated me that that could even happen. So I started making paintings of pilotless jets, and I made a rather beautiful, I think it's a rather beautiful little picture, which I gave to my, as I said, long-suffering bride, who I was courting at the time as a gift. And she took it on the chin, and but has mentioned since that she thought it odd that to get as a courting gift a painting that pretty well referred to impending doom was perhaps not appropriate.
But you've been exonerated, I believe, because did have a plane crash into your house.
That's true, Will, yes.
In later years.
Yes, and it's something that is of particular interest to all sorts of people, but I remember fondly that my daughter pointed out to me that I had only some weeks beforehand said to her, then she wanted to go to Frankston on the bus or something like that, and I said, there's no way you're going to Frankston on the bus. There's as much chance of that happening as there is of a plane crashing in our front yard. And 2 weeks later, bang, there
bang.
It is.
Well, that's great. Thank you, John. That's fascinating as always. And, of course, that's it for another week. It's flown by again. And I think it's been pretty tough on me this week. I think we'd all agree.
I've really had to struggle
through this. The sweat is flowing. And we normally do the news at this stage. Mm. We leave a bit at the end to do the news. I went to the pigeonhole. I'm not very good at doing this stuff while Sally's away. I went to the pigeonhole to clear it out. And we have received a letter this week, which I thought, looking at this, we should probably read this. I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind reading this letter for me, please, John.
And that's it there?
That's the one.
Okay. Yes, well, certainly addressed to Archibald and to Mr. Peter Swan.
Mm.
I'm writing to complain about smut on your recent art show. Good.
Right.
I was shocked and disgusted to listen to last week to you and your co-presenter talking in very bass tones at a pornographic so-called erotic art display in Melbourne. And I do remember that. To hear such language on the wireless was disgusting both to myself and to the many other listeners to RPP. I belong to an important community seniors group and I can say that we will be switching off your show in the future. Need I remind you that use of such language has no place in the modern home, nor does it have any place in today's art. I've been to the Herald Sun outdoor show and have never seen smutty paintings there. So-called modern art seems to be nothing but an excuse for titillation of the lowest kind, and to think that you are paid out of the public purse to present such filth, you should be ashamed. I never thought I would hear such language on the public airwaves. You should wash your mouth out with soap. Yours sincerely, Miss Heather Dunbar Dramana. I think we've got some soap, haven't we?
Goodness me. Well, I want to reassure Miss Dunbar that the station does take this very seriously. Peter Swan is currently suspended. I was involved in that interview.
Indeed.
But I was an innocent party, obviously.
Not named by Miss Dunbar.
No, we're not named at all. And it will be brought up at the station's strategic planning meeting, which I think, are you going to that, John? That's
absolutely
in Port Douglas next month,
yep.
I think.
Why wouldn't I go to that?
We'll be there. And look, on that note, I hope that the seniors of Dramana don't switch off your wireless sets because we need every listener that we can get. We normally have news, as I said, but if you've missed us, if you've missed Arts About, and at this time, John, we normally say that we don't know anything about
art. We do
art.
Say that, yeah, or that we don't like it or something.
I know. However, I thought this time we might remind our listeners that we do know what we like.
We do indeed like
it. So why don't we see you next week?
Yep.